All right, so we're going to get started. Thanks for your patience while we sort some of that out, and welcome to class 3 of 4 on samsara and nirvana. So we're going to start with the prayers, but remember, the very first thing we do is set our motivation. So even our motivation, the prayers help our motivation. They're like an on-ramp, escalating our motivation to a greater extent. So even start by thinking, you know, why am I here tonight? What am I hoping to accomplish? Even in this meditation that I'm going to be led in a minute, you know, what's my hope for this? You know, usually at minimum, your hope is to learn more, to be a calmer person, a better person in whatever way that crosses your mind. That's usually why people are here, to find some relief from some stress or anxiety or whatever it is, and to increase their happiness. So just think about that for a minute as we enter into this. Because even if you were going to the gym tonight to lift weights, there'd be a reason you had in mind. You know, okay, I'm building bone density in my case, or I want to get buff, you know, or there's to be some reason that you're there and you'd be trying to monitor your progress. You wouldn't be just going there just be surprised, like, how did I end up at the gym? You would have some reason. So same with here. There's some reason why you came, and really think about that. And then what we're trying to do is we're trying to, first of all, center it in ourselves, like, why am I here? And then as I reach those goals, how it's going to benefit others around me, and then even the people I don't know. And then even it's going to hopefully help me reach my goal of ending my suffering, my own samsaric cycle, and that I would be able to achieve nirvana. And then from that place, from that mountaintop, I will be able to reach complete enlightenment, so that I'll be able to help all those around me also escape this prison of samsara. So I'm going to ask Linda to read the prayers, and remember,
I don't have
here. Okay. And it's refuge in bodhicitta. And with each time that we do it, we're kind of amplifying our refuge and bodhicitta. And what page in the gold book? Okay. 34. Okay. It's Monday. And so, and, you know, remember each time, the first time we're really saying this prayer with this wish that each cycle through samsara, each lifetime, even each moment in this lifetime, if you don't believe in future lifetimes, that each of these moments are as good as possibly can be, so that we can accumulate more merit, so we can purify, so that we can be wiser, more compassionate human beings, that all the causes for those things exist in each moment. And so that first round of prayers is to benefit that cycle. The second round of prayers is to help us get out of samsara, to end our suffering, to get out of this prison. And the third round is that we can achieve complete enlightenment, bodhicitta, compassion, wisdom, all united into this explosion of complete enlightenment. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Yes.
I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
Okay, now check your posture. Make sure that if you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor, your back is as comfortably straight, you know, trying to line up the vertebrae so that they are like coins stacked on one another. Elbows out away from your body, chin tucked a little bit so that your neck is also in that alignment. Your tongue at the back of your teeth, and your eyes just a little bit open to keep you alert. And then put all your awareness on your breath. Each inhalation and exhalation. Trying to exhale any of the worries or stress or unease that you have from today. Just let it exhale with your breath. Then inhaling pure golden light that fills each cell, rejuvenating you with clarity and energy. And as you put all your awareness on your breath, see if you can notice when thoughts start to arise and just let them settle back down into the ocean of the mind, if it's possible. So just like there's a pause between your breaths, there can also be a pause between your thoughts. And I'll let you just count your breaths and see if you can become aware of these, of this ocean of your mind for the next 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, and just come back to the room. And were you able to kind of sense when a feeling is kind of coming up, or is it just so fast or so sluggish that it's hard to do that? Usually it's either one or the other. Are you able to kind of see them? Oh, here comes a thought. Is it starting to formulate? No. Keep practicing, because you can get there usually. Sometimes it's hard at the end of the day. But if you can do that, if you can start to see the moment that it's like, oh, yeah, you start to tell yourself this thing, then you're about to follow it, and you go, wait a minute, and you kind of pull back. And then there's a little pause, and then there, I'm thinking about dinner, and oops, I'm thinking about that. And so one of the reason I'm bringing that up is it kind of fits with a lot of our topic on samsara, because you know how we have the ability to put a saddle on that thought and ride it, which we'll usually just do that. We don't even think about it. You know, the saddle's ready and we just jump on. And the point is to have more choices, more options. So we don't have to believe everything that our mind is telling us. We don't have to follow everything that our mind is telling us. But we often overly identify with our thoughts. You know, we think we are our thoughts. Who would we be without these beliefs and ideas? And so a good way to poke that idea and have some doubt in that idea is to think of a time when your mind has changed on something pretty significant, or maybe small, but something that you noticed when your mind changed on an issue or a, you know, where's the you that believed the other thing? Are you a different you now that you believe this new thing, or you learn this new thing, or your mind has changed about something? You know, who is it? Who is this person who believed this? Who is this person who believes these things? Just because we're going to come back to this theme over and over about trying to kind of make some dents in the walls around us, or a chink in that way of thinking, through these little chinks, we're going to create bigger holes where the light comes in. And so there's so many things that we can do to do that. And challenging ourselves all the time to think of something that's causing us stress or anxiety, then who is it that's having that? What part of us is having it? Last week we talked a lot about the different parts of us. What part of it in me is having this worry about that? So I know, you know, I've been thinking a lot about when I retire. And I remember hearing other people before really struggling with that, because so much of our identity, especially in the West, is wrapped up with our job. And so who will I be when I retire? If, you know, I'll be a retired person. Before I was a this person. I was a nurse. I was a doctor. I was whatever I was. And then I won't be that anymore. And so the ways that we saddle up and ride our identity, the way we latch on to that, it's all the same part of attachment that we've been talking about, even if it doesn't feel like clinging, or it doesn't feel like the classic clinging. It's a more subtle identification with, you know, who we talk a lot in these days about identity politics, right? And how you identify yourself. And, but I've also heard a lot of people saying these identities are mental constructions. I'm like, well, yeah, everything is a mental construction. It's not just gender identity that's a mental construction. What isn't a mental construction? What isn't a mental construction? So the point is to use the mental constructions for something that will carry us in the direction we want to go. All right. I wanted to check out a couple of things, and then we'll play this clip. Maybe. We'll try. We'll act it out if we can't play it. Sooner or later, we'll play it. So, you know, the challenge is to teach this mighty topic on samsara nirvana in 4 sessions in an hour each. But I guess the one thing to just remember is that the 4 Noble Truths is all right there. So we can just keep going back to everything in the 4 Noble Truths. And what's wonderful about, you know, some of the ways that... Well, let me just back up, that we often talk about the Buddha as the physician. I don't know if any of you have heard that analogy, that the Buddha is the physician. We're the patient. We are collectively the patient. And And this works really well. This whole idea of this works really well, especially with COVID. If he is the physician of kind of the human condition that provides us with a diagnosis of our suffering. So our suffering is the first noble truth. If you don't know that you're suffering, there's all kinds of problems that are going to arise, right? If you didn't know there's COVID, oh my, you know, let's just take that as an example, or we can use some other illness. Then the suffering just gets worse and worse and worse. Say I'm allergic to something I'm eating, and I have no idea, and I'm just suffering. I'm just in agony. Unless somebody tells me, well, even with COVID, if I don't know that they're suffering, it just continues to get worse. So the physician, the Buddha, provides us with a diagnosis that there's suffering. There's suffering. And then, and the cause and the etiology of the illness. So if I was allergic to shellfish and a doctor said, oh, all this suffering you're having, all this suffering because you're allergic to shellfish, that would be the second noble truth, the cause of my suffering. Immediately as the cause of my suffering arises, there's a prognosis, right? So the doctor now gives me this prognosis that, oh, this is treatable. This is treatable. Which is the third noble truth, which is the end of suffering. The prognosis is nirvana. Isn't that wonderful? This is the prognosis the Buddha is making for all of us, is nirvana. And the fourth noble truth then is the prescription to get there. So if we were doing it about, say, I had an allergy, I didn't even know I was suffering because I just am so used to it. I've always grown up with this suffering. And then somebody pointed out, hey, guess what? All this stuff you're going through, you don't have to go through that. You're suffering, and the cause is the shellfish. Oh, the prognosis is it's curable, and what you have to do is eradicate this from your diet. The Four Noble Truths is actually a plan of action. It's not simply a collection of ideas to think about. It's actually a plan. And then all of, you know, we talked before about how Buddhism is like this accordion file. And so then once you learn a lot of the things that are in the accordion file, then you're the one, because it's your mind, you'll know which thing to pull out and implement on which day according to how you what you need, of course, with the teacher's help. So the first noble truth, I think, is one of the hardest ones. And it's one that we have to constantly understand, I mean, deeply understand. And that's where all the chinking away at the wall comes in. Because it seems to me that it's something that's where we are in our story. Most of us is really understanding what is that suffering, because we're living oftentimes in a realm that can be beautiful. We're surrounded by a lot of wonderful things. And what we do is unconsciously we're taking refuge in those things. We're wanting more of the good things that are so available to us. And we think that this remedy that we keep hearing about means we have to let go of all those things. And that's not what we have to let go of. So the origin of suffering as a noble truth, the origin is what has to be abandoned. The cessation of suffering is as a noble truth should be realized directly. And the path is what should be followed. So we all wish to be happy and avoid suffering. That's even in a little insect, you can see that. That's nothing new. The problem is we continually seek happiness in the wrong ways. And so we just spin on that cycle that I had you read that article about. So we need to more fully understand and completely understand our suffering in order to really find the way out of it. So one of the things I think that's hard to get is when Buddha is talking about the etiology of our illness is desire and craving. Our most basic and deep-seated craving is that things be different than what they are. You know, that we want to get away from what's making us unhappy. If we were truly happy and content, would we wish that things would be different? Probably not, but almost every day there's something that we have a deep-seated craving that things be different. But what we're being told is to abandon desire and craving, to destroy the desire and craving, which is not easy. which is why it's called practice. But it's this desire that you can see at the center of the wheel that we talked about last week that's fueling this this continual cycling through samsaric existence. But desire is only the most palpable cause. The ultimate cause of suffering is our ignorance, which stems from our clinging to what we perceive as ourself. And this perception of a self is what separates us from others and ends up creating all kinds of problems, because first of all, we feel isolated, but also because on another level, we feel we're just out for ourselves. It just makes sense. If we see ourselves as so separate from others, that we end up then doing things that harm that very self. So these are huge topics. These are not things you just think about once and go, yeah, I get it now. We can kind of get it on an intellectual level, but to let it really seep down into us. And what does that mean if I no longer see myself as so separate from others? What is that really going to feel like? What is it going to feel like if I really have renunciation? And remember, I've defined renunciation multiple times as not going away from the world, but knowing that the world goes away. And we're going to talk about this in a minute, because I think that's kind of the heart of the matter. What would it be like if we really had renunciation? It sounds like we'd be, you know, it sounds very different than what it actually would be. So I want to give us a really good picture of what it would be. But first of all, an important point to hold on to is that there's no place to go. The nirvana is something, not something else we're going to go to. It's right here. That I think Nagarjuna has said, there's not a thread of difference. Well, let me do the exact quote. Between samsara and nirvana, there is not the slightest thread of difference. The only difference is our perception of it. Viewed with attachment and under ignorance, what we're experiencing is samsara, not nirvana. What has to change is our view. It's a hard thing to kind of get, but that's what has to change. So I want to play this little clip of, you know, I don't know how many of you have seen The Miracle Worker, but this is a little clip of it. And I want to, we'll see if the sound works. Linda's been working mighty hard over there to try to get the sound to work. And if it doesn't, you know, no big deal. We'll play it next week. But what I want to say is, if you haven't seen it, Helen Keller is a woman, this is at the turn of the century or something, and the movie's from the 1960s, so the acting is like way over the top. So she was born blind and deaf, or maybe she wasn't born that way, but she soon contracted some illness as an infant, and she lost her sight and her hearing, and was just in this world, you know, of complete disconnection from others. And so then her parents hire a teacher to come, and she's having a lot of trouble getting through to the girl, because her parents are very worried, and they kind of coddle her. And so the teacher has convinced them to let her take Helen away to this little cabin where she works with her. And she gets Helen to understand fingerspelling in her hand. So she's doing this fingerspelling and trying to get her to understand that things have a name, because she's cut off from everybody. She can't really communicate. She's just acting out of impulse. And so the teacher's trying to do all this hand spelling in her hand. And in the beginning, she's saying, yeah, that's right. Just imitate me for now. Just imitate me. Because it hasn't really sunk down. So like I said before, like 99% of the movie is about trying to break through her ignorance. That's the hard part. And what you're going to see in the clip is when it finally all starts to click for Helen. So she's been fingerspelling and trying to get her to understand that things have a name, particularly water. She puts Helen's hand on her throat so she can feel the vibration when she says words. So she's trying to get Helen to say and to understand that things have a name. Okay,
we're going to give this a shot. I'm going to ask Bob, if you can't hear it, go ahead and unmute and tell me, because my video will be taking up the full screen, so I won't be able to see chat. Thank you, Bob.
No,
I can't hear it either.
Try it one more time. Back to it.
Oh, there we go.
W-A-T-E-R, water. It has a name.
Good.
W-A-T.
Do you hear it?
Yes.
Yeah, she knows is the title of that clip, and at the end, she's learning the word teacher. So, you know, I was showing this to Geshe-la, and I said, you know, it's not liberation from samsara. He goes, no, but it's liberation from her ignorance. At that moment, she's now able to, a whole world opens. She hasn't gone anywhere. She hasn't gone anywhere, but her whole view has changed, and so she was around all these very same things and people, but she didn't have, nobody had broken through that wall that we're talking about. And so I like this for so many different reasons, right? It's really not even she didn't even understand her own suffering. So that was the first step, the first noble truth. That's why we study suffering, because otherwise it's really depressing. But a lot of the meditations in this module are on like, okay, let's meditate on the suffering of birth. Let's meditate on the suffering of sickness. Let's meditate on the suffering of death. Let's meditate. It's to understand that, just like Helen didn't understand that her own suffering. And once she understood what the teacher was trying to show her, that there are names for things, that's when everything else was just kind of ripple effect. Like, this is the cause of my separation from people, is I don't know how to communicate. And now the cure for this is to learn these things. And now she was already on the path. So like 2, 3, and 4 just happened right there. You know, the hardest one was to understand her own suffering. And so what she did for a long time to break through that whole breaking a chink in the wall was just mimicking, just learning these things and following them until all of a sudden she had that realization. And what is in them a realization, just like in everyday life, it's when you now can't go back because you now have the knowledge so steeped and deep in every cell of your body, there's no turning back. You got it. It's no longer this thing you have to sit down and think about. This is why I've said, like, prisoners don't need to generate the wish to get out of prison. They wake up every single day. They walk through the whole day with the wish to be out of prison. If we had that same wish, if we could see that samsara was that same prison imprisonment, then we wouldn't have to work hard to generate the wish. But the other thing about once... in her situation, but in ours too, is that once you have that realization, once you have generated the wish, and you have renunciation, you can use everything to progress. You can use everything. Everything can be used as a way to get out. Every single thing can be used to help you dispel your own ignorance, to help purify, to help gain wisdom, to gain compassion. Every single thing can be used. You saw her. She just couldn't get enough of like everything around her. She wanted to know. So it's that same kind of understanding that we have everything we need. I remember this teacher of Geshe-la's. I went to the monastery years ago to do this retreat. His teacher was giving a teaching and he said, we have everything we need to achieve enlightenment. It's all right here. You know, all the suffering in our life, the problems, the joys, everything. And when the monks first came and stayed at my house years ago, I remember, you know, taking them to the grocery store and they would take photographs at the grocery store. They'd also spend all this time like just imagining all the things in the grocery store that they were offering, right? That way, creating merit, because it's through our actions of body, speech, and mind that we can expand. So we need to be... it's not that we move away from our happiness. We actually need to expand our happiness because no one's going to be able to take refuge and shelter in our happiness and in our wisdom unless we expand it. So we're not renouncing happiness. Look how happy Helen Keller was when her ignorance was dispelled. That's the thing I also want to get across. I'm like getting goosebumps as I talk about it. It's like when you achieve renunciation, there's more. There's more happiness. It's not like, okay, now I need to shrivel up and go away over here and not even enjoy anything. No, you will enjoy everything even more because your use of it will not be as fraught. So when I talked about like the hotel room, you're not frightened to leave the hotel room. You're not, you know, stressed out about like, oh, I really like that hotel room and I'm never going to go back. It's okay. You enjoyed it. You ordered room service, turned on the TV, whatever. You really enjoyed it. Now you're leaving it. On to the next one. Obviously, that's an easy example, but that's what renunciation is like. I also think, because I try to think a lot about what would it be like if to have true renunciation? I think we'd be dedicating everything all the time. Every little thing we saw would just be like, oh, yeah, yeah. Right now, we don't think it really does much good. But I think at that point, we would doubt it. And we would, like I said, find use of everything. We can use our sadness, our anger, all of the things that come into us, we'd be able to use and put to use. And I also remember the Dalai Lama saying, this really impressed me because I was struggling with this idea at the time. He said, if we achieve, you know, if we understand bodhicitta, and we're set on that goal to achieve that mind state, right? Or even if we're determined to achieve renunciation because we know achieving renunciation is the path to bodhicitta and on and on and on. Then we don't stress out so much about how long is it going to take me to get there? which is what my stress was. Like, oh my God, I got to get this done. I want to do this now. You're saying because we won't feel that way, because we'll feel that we're just going to move from happiness to happiness. Even if it's not looking like a party all the time, we'll know that maybe happiness might be too strong a word, but we'll know that we can use everything, that we're not going to be in that same kettle of suffering, that everything, that we'll just move from moment to moment like that. And I think we'll have more faith in that that's the direction we're moving in. So what I want you to think about is something that's a real obstacle to you personally that you want to make some chinks in. Whether it's, you know, we talked last week a lot about the delusions and we worked a little bit on them. So if it's doubt, you know, if you have big walls of doubt around even like reincarnation or the ability to make progress. I know Geshe-la has talked with me about sometimes when he was younger, he said, I'd really doubt, like, is enlightenment even possible? So think about what doubts you have, what sits in the way. What other delusions sit in the way? You know, like if you're struggling with anger or depression or sadness or jealousy, attachment. I mean, they're all in the way. But pick one. Pick one that you personally are very familiar with. And think, and we can talk about how to crack it a little bit. You know, like I think on the last class when I was leading on death and rebirth, we talked a little bit about cracking through doubts around reincarnation. There's lots of things you could watch. There's lots of studies that have been done. So you can actually approach it with just kind of a logical mind and read some of the research that's been done by scientists following children who have these stories. You can also, you know, do analytical meditation on why is it that we come in with different tendencies? Why is it that children are born so differently? Where is that coming from? So you can use your logical mind, you can use your analytical mind to kind of break through the other parts of your mind. This is exactly what we were talking about last week, about having different parts of yourself talking to each other. There's a part of you that is the teacher, that knows way more than the part of you that's completely in the dark. And sometimes we let the part of us that's in the dark run the show. And we can talk to that part of ourselves with great compassion, because we have so many different parts of ourselves, right? Even in Buddhism, we talk about, you know, the five aggregates, which are made up of all these other parts of our minds. So we can talk to parts of ourselves and say, you know, and have a whole dialogue with it. And then see if we can have the wiser part of ourselves add something into that conversation. So does anybody want to comment on that or share their biggest obstacle or ask any questions while I take some water?
And for those of you on YouTube or Zoom, feel free to chime in. If you're on YouTube, just write it in the chat. If you're on Zoom, you can either put it in the chat or raise your hand. Oh, Bob, you unmuted. Do you have something to share?
Oh, that was an accident.
Oh.
No, okay. Since I made that accident, maybe there's a reason. I've been feeling that I can make progress at renouncing various kinds of self-cherishing. I had just very shortly after I was in this community and going to the morning meditation group, Hemet said something in a class I was taking. He said, the wisdom that realizes emptiness, and I didn't understand that, and I asked him what it meant, and I sort of got an answer. I thought I understood. The next morning, I watched our dog snuggling up to Kathy, and I was happy for them instead of being jealous. I had this thing going on of, you know, the dogs we get always like her better. And there's always a little sadness for me and a little jealousy. And that morning, I just was enjoying watching them have their moment. And there was a freedom in that. It clicks. Like, I can get rid of something and then be free. And I didn't realize It goes to what you were saying about not knowing you're in the prison. I didn't know. I didn't know that I've been living 72 years self-cherishing that badly. It's pretty.
I like that example.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great example, and I think that you had that click because you were able to see that it for what it was. You know, that first of all, even to be able to see and have the wisdom to see that, oh, that's jealousy, and then that's the first step to know that that is the obstacle, and then you can even just place a little seed of doubt on top of that by saying, what would it be like if I didn't have that? What would it be like if I actually couldn't feel that? And so that might then another little like movie might develop that you could actually move into, you know. So even if it's hard to, you know, eradicate the jealousy or whatever, just the doubt, just like maybe there's another way to feel. What would it be like if I actually couldn't feel that? Then what arises is like this joy in watching this and this joy for these other beings. And then that's stunning, right? I mean, yeah, Bob, I had something similar happen to me once where I was very upset that I wasn't included in this thing that people were doing. And I didn't want to feel jealous. I knew it was jealousy, but I couldn't make it go away. It just, every time I was, because the problem is you can't just make it go away. You can't just ignore it. You have to work with it. And I wasn't working with it. I was like ashamed that I had this feeling. So I was running away from it. And it didn't work because the more I ran, it would just smack up against me. So then finally, I just got so exhausted. I did what Bob did. You know, I looked at it and then I even asked myself, because I remember exactly where I was. I was having lunch with somebody and I thought to myself, what would it be like if I couldn't have this feeling? And the whole restaurant felt like it just lit up in gold or something. It was just, I no longer felt that. It was like I asked myself what it would feel like, and everything calmed down inside of me. And this other feeling arose. And it was a calmer feeling. And it felt like, oh, I would be connected with all these other beings who are free from that feeling. And that, because I was feeling left out, but suddenly when I imagined what it would feel like if I didn't feel left out, I felt connected. I felt connected to beings who had kind of overcome that feeling, and that was amazing. So yeah, thanks, Bob. That's brilliant. And that's also a really good example of taking something that's possibly workable. And we've talked before about, you know, expanding your patience by having success. You know, you can only really have success at these things if you take it small. You know, Helen wasn't being asked to read a long text in Braille. She was being shown words letter by letter. That was the first stepping stone. So in the thing that you want to cast some doubt on, take a baby step and know that you create something so that you're going to have guaranteed success. Does anybody else have any comments or thoughts, questions?
Not on YouTube or Zoom. What about in the class here? Go ahead, Kurt.
I'm going to, Chris, I'm going to repeat it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So how would you deal with a situation where you feel like you're being unfairly criticized?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the question is, maybe we'll come up with a theoretical example, but when you feel like you're doing a good job and other people are being critical, is that right? So say like I'm at my job and I'm working on a project and I feel like I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. Is it not being recognized, or is it?
It's more like being critical.
Okay, so people are then being critical of it. And then what feeling arises?
Well, you know, all of
them. Mm-hmm. Anger, resentment. In looking at this, like, let's say it's me now, so I'm working on this project, which I have many of, and yeah, this happened. And so is there any validity to their critiques? There's not enough validity, because it's not the delivery that's the problem. It's that it's really not valid.
Their perception.
Okay. Yeah. So now what we're trying to do is, how can we cast doubt and help with the anger that's arising around this? Yeah. Yeah, we can call it lots of things, because, you know, who wouldn't want to be recognized for their hard work? You know, that's going to be a natural thing. You put effort into something, you want to be recognized for it. So any thoughts on how to cast doubt on the anger that arises from a situation like that? I mean, I feel like I need to know a little bit more, but because maybe this is not a good place for me to be. Maybe if this is happening over and over again, this is not really a good place. You know, so there's that. Like, how do I take care of my mind in a place like this? I know Geshe-la talks a lot about, sometimes you need to remove yourself from that object. It's an object that's creating a lot of desire for you, that's getting in the way. Sometimes we need to remove ourselves. If there's just ongoing conflict that we can't resolve somehow, we also need to maybe remove ourselves if that can't settle down. But since I work as a mediator, I'm always interested in how can there be better communication so I can understand this other person's perspective. What's going on from their side? You know, I'm in my shoes, but why do they see it this way? Doesn't mean that this is what I tell people in my office all the time, is they're both right. They're both right. We're not going to figure out who's right or wrong here. What we're trying to do is figure out what are the concerns so that we can move forward. So you know your concerns in that situation. And then to cast doubt, a little bit doubt on, or to just bring something else into the picture rather than the anger and the feeling of, yeah, probably disappointment and like I'm not being appreciated, I'm not being valued, is what's going on for them. So I had something kind of similar happen, which I was telling you all about last week or the week before, where what I realized when I got away from the person, I did kind of this meditation, is that she had a lot of jealousy around the project that I was working on. And so I didn't want to continue to aggravate her jealousy, but I also needed to get this project done. It just made it clearer to me so that I didn't have to respond so defensively, that actually she was in agony with her own jealousy. So I would encourage you to do is to try to think, how are they seeing this? And so I did remember this other meditation of, which helped me build some compassion of, you know, looking at myself from somebody else's view and seeing me as, oh, she thinks she's so good, you know, and that's an interesting exercise to do. She thinks she's so high and mighty or whatever it is. It just kind of brings you, you know, kind of gives you another perspective to balance things. But play around with this. Let us know. yeah, so if we have developed renunciation, then everything, we're holding a little less. We're holding more lightly. We're still holding. We're still in the world. We're not going to be, this is again where Helen's a good example. We're still using everything in the world. We're still right here, but our entire view of it all has changed. We still need to work. We still need to do projects. We're still going to have obstacles, but our entire view of all of it has changed. And this is why I think then you get into like the mind training of being able to use people's difficult views of us and their challenges of us as something, you know, there's this movie of St. Francis I saw a long time ago where, you know, he's reached this state that I can't even imagine. But so he's reached this state and now he's kind of frustrated because nobody is criticizing him. Nobody's getting in his way. Nobody's bothering him. So he begs his students to criticize him. to push him around. He's like, he lays down on the ground. He's like, come on, step on me, kick me. Because he wanted to develop a negative mind state that he could wrestle with. Because he had conquered so many of the smaller ones that now he was like, I need some more. I need some more. Give me one. So for most of us, we're not at that place. When we walk out the door, we're going to have plenty of challenges right there. But if we can try to look at one, so that's your homework for this week, is to take a relatively easy one that's going to arise this week as your moment to practice. So think about something again that you're working on, whether it's, you know, feeling undervalued, but that's a hard one. So think of one that you know you can make some progress with, smaller anger. Smaller irritation. Okay, when I drive in the next, 24 hours, I want to see anything that's irritating in a different way. I want to see everybody who's driving on the road as the person I love the most, or as somebody who's just learning to drive who I care a lot about. You know, something that you think you can do even for 10 minutes, and that will make a little chink in the armor. Okay, so now we're going to wind up, take a minute to think about dedicating the merit that you created tonight by coming to a class on Monday and working through technical difficulties and helping us and sharing your ideas and thoughts and being patient with me. And you're going to dedicate that merit because energy was expended through your body, speech, and mind. And so every action is like a seed. And so now you get to decide where the seed is going to grow. And one way to dedicate your merit is to imagine that you are joining it with the merit of all the holy beings who've ever lived, all the merit that they've created, like a river of merit that they've created. You are now joining your merit into that merit, so that it's magnified multiple times. That's one way to dedicate it. And then think how you would like for this merit to grow and to ripen. And I'd suggest you think about it in the highest way, that it can help you realize renunciation, bodhicitta, wisdom realizing emptiness, that you'll understand the Four Noble Truths perfectly as a map of how to get out of this prison and help us all get out. And Linda, would you read the
Shanti Deva?
Yes, please. Shanti Deva prayer. This is a great way to dedicate your merit.
And those of you who have a prayer book, it's page 32. May all beings everywhere, plagued by suffering, the body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
All right. Thank you all. See you next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Linda.
Linda.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you next week.